The time is 6 o'clock. This is Radio Ghana, the news read by Lily Defo
and Baba Yakubu.
In the headlines, Minister of Gospel warns country could lose services of competent citizens if vilification of leaders is not stopped. Attorney General's Department hopeful of state winning appeal against acquittal of businessman Alfred Woyomen. Tomb of Saddam Hussein destroyed in fighting near his hometown Tikrit. And Cyclone Palm wreaks havoc on Pacific island of Vanuatu, with nearly 90% of buildings destroyed in the capital Villa. Here's the summary with Barbara Yakubu.
The immediate past General Assembly Moderator of Evangelical Presbyterian Church Ghana, the Very Reverend Francis Aminu, has expressed worry over vilification of some leaders who risk their lives in their line of duty to ensure that Ghana attains its desired development goals. Reverend Aminu was speaking at the farewell service in honor of Reverend Joyce Kofi Kodade, who has ended his duty tour as a Synod Moderator of the West Volta Presbytery. The Deputy Attorney General is hopeful of the state winning an appeal against the acquittal of businessman Alfred Agbeshiwoyomi. However, a former Commissioner of SRA, Justice Emil Short, says the state is likely to lose its appeal. According to him, the trial judge made findings of fact to support his judgment. And the tomb of Saddam Hussein has been destroyed in fighting near his hometown Tikrit. Footage shows all that remains of the once lavish mausoleum in the village of Al Awaja are pillars that held up the roof. Iraqi forces and Iranian Bashar militia are battling to drive Islamic State militants from Tikrit.
Radio Ghana, meeting the news challenge with credible information.
The news now in detail. The immediate past General Assembly Moderator of the EP Church Ghana, Very Reverend Francis Aminu, has expressed regret at the vilification of some leaders who risked their lives in the line of duty to ensure that Ghana attains its desired developmental goals. He observed that if this trend of unwarranted acts are not nipped in the bud, the country could lose the services of potential resourceful and competent citizens who would decline to serve in leadership positions for fear of similar vilification. Very Reverend Aminu was speaking at a farewell service in honor of Reverend Joyce Kofi Kodade, who has ended his duty tour as Synod Moderator of the West Volta Presbytery. We bring you this report.
The grand ceremony, which coincided with the 70th birthday of Reverend Kodade, brought together people from all walks of life, including members of the Council of State, the clergy, and other high-profile personalities. Reverend Kodade, who holds a Bachelor of Arts and Master's degrees from the University of Ghana, as well as a postgraduate degree from the Trinity Theological Seminary, was ordained into the ministry in 1977. He was the first organizer of the Evangelical Presbyterian Church Ghana Religious Education. He also served at the Curriculum Research and Development Division of the Ministry of Education. Reverend Kodade worked as chaplain and headmaster in some educational institutions and as a full-time district pastor in some congregations until he was appointed a synod moderator in 2009. In a citation, Reverend Kodade was described as a noble servant who discharged his stewardship with diligence and commitment. Very Reverend Aminu urged Ghanaians to do away with acts of indiscipline and rather cherish the natural and human resources of the country that have the propensity of promoting growth. He called on Christians to serve as worthy disciples in the propagation of the gospel of salvation. In his remarks, Reverend Kodade expressed gratitude to God and people who made his 38-year service in the ministry of Christ successful.
And that was the next day's report.
The Catholic Metropolitan Archbishop of Accra, the Most Reverend Charles Famabako, says Ghanaians must stop complaining and rather thank God for the many blessings he has bestowed on the nation. Though Most Reverend Famabako acknowledges the current energy challenge and the discomfort it has unleashed on Ghanaians, he believes complaining too much paints a picture of Ghanaians' ingratitude to God and does not speak well of a nation endowed with many blessings. He was speaking at the climax of a three-day pastoral visit to the St. Michael's Garrison Catholic Church in Accra. Irabna Paha reports.
As Catholics across the globe mark the fourth Sunday of Lent on the Catholic calendar, the Metropolitan Archbishop of Accra, the Most Reverend Charles Pamabako, on the 3 days pastoral visit to the St. Michael Garrison Catholic Church at 37 in Accra, taught members on spiritual works, ways to live fruitful social lives, and how to improve on their finances. He said Ghanaians have become like the Israelites, who instead of looking back to thank God for freedom and deliverance from the hands of Pharaoh, rather made complaints their everyday affair.
When the people of God were on the way coming from Egypt into the promised land, they were tired, they were upset, they did not like the food, they did not have water. They complained to Moses, why have you brought them here to come and suffer? Like Ghanaians always complaining. We are all complaining, isn't it? They didn't know they were complaining against God. God had saved them from Pharaoh. God had saved them from slavery. God had led them across the Red Sea. Instead of them looking back at the blessing and saying thank you and glorifying God, they were complaining like Ghanaians, always complaining. 58 years of independence. We have had peace, we have had joy, we have had happiness. Just because of a few difficulties, some small things or something, Ghanaians are always complaining. Nothing is good for Ghanaians. So God punished them for their sins, and they sent to Moses and said, we are sorry.
Lent on the Catholic calendar is a period which looks at the cross of Jesus Christ in remembrance of the gifts of salvation and not the sufferings. Most Reverend Pamabako said the focus of Jesus' suffering on the cross has overshadowed the gifts of salvation, the death office. A thought, Most Reverend Pamabako says, must be discouraged.
Think about the crucifixion of our Lord Jesus Christ. Just as Moses lifted up the serpent in the desert on the cross, so will the Son of Man be lifted up, and whoever believes in him shall be saved. So today we are invited to think about the cross, the sign of the cross, the meaning of the crucifixion of our Lord Jesus Christ for you and me as Catholics.
122 members were confirmed into the Catholic Church.
Irabna Paha reporting. The spiritual head of the Ahmadiyya Muslim community worldwide, Hazrat Mizar Masroor Ahmad, has condemned the persistent use of the name of Islam to perpetrate worse forms of atrocities against humanity. The situation, he said, does not only portray the religion negatively, but undermines efforts to project the true teachings of Islam. He said this at the 12th Annual Peace Symposium of the Ahmadiyya Muslim community in London. Ibrahim Kwatin reports.
The annual peace symposium, which was attended by over 500 delegates, is the 12th by the Ahmadiyya Muslim community in the UK. It aims at rewarding individuals or organizations that have selflessly worked to advance the cause of humanity. The conference also provides a platform to project the true teachings of Islam, especially at the time the activities of certain group of miscreants seek to put the religion in a bad light. Members of the British House of Lords, MPs, secretaries of state, faith-based organizations, representatives of charities around the world, and other dignitaries that took turns to address the symposium commended the Ahmadiyya community for projecting the true teachings of Islam. In an address, the spiritual head of the Ahmadiyya Muslim community, Hazrat Mirza Masroor Ahmed, challenged the perpetrators of violence in the name of Islam to prove their assertion.
As far as Islam is concerned, we see that in this era, Islam's teachings are being constantly misrepresented and distorted. It is claimed that Islam promotes a violent jihad and bloodshed. However, nothing could be further from the truth. If a Muslim seeks to harm any other person, regardless of their faith or belief, or if any Muslim tries to damage the sacred places of other people, then he or she acts in complete violation of this very clear Quranic injunction.
UN Rapporteur on Freedom of Religion or Belief, Professor Heine Belfield, says the UN will continue to expose perpetrators of religious violence.
People are denied the very elementary freedom to say who they are, to say how they see themselves, to define themselves in freedom. And freedom of people to say who they are is where freedom of religion or belief begins. Without that freedom, the whole enterprise is just collapses.
The 12th Peace Award was won by an Indian social worker, Madame Sindhutai Sapkai. She took home a plaque and £10,000. Reporting from London, I am Ibrahim Kwate.
Well, the UN Special Rapporteur on Freedom of Religion or Belief, Professor Heine Belfield, says the UN Charter on Religious Rights and Freedoms is a constitutional instrument that guarantees freedom of worship and association. He has therefore urged UN member countries not to compromise on its provisions. In an interview with Ibrahim Kwate in London, Professor Belfield said the UN will ensure the protection of the rights of religious minorities.
I know, Ibrahim, you come from Ghana. Let me tell you, I was in Sierra Leone conducting a UN fact-finding mission 1.5 years ago, and there I really saw Ahmadiyya-run schools with Sunni teachers, students from Christian backgrounds visiting the Interreligious Council. I saw the prayer spoken by the Ahmadi representative. Next thing was a Sunni saying Amen. This is what I should like to see in many parts of the world. Unfortunately, we know this is very different in some regions, and the Ahmadiyya Muslim community is a very persecuted community in some countries.
Yeah, Prof, let's look at the issue of religious minorities who are being persecuted across the world. The, you know, UN Charter on Human Rights and Religious Freedoms is clear. Now, despite all these interventions by the United Nations to ensure that religious minorities are being protected, the opposite is the case. What is the UN doing to name and shame such perpetrators who continue to use the name of religion to perpetrate all forms of violence?
We had a discussion in the plenary of the Human Rights Council in Geneva just a few days ago with, I mean, the entire world community being present. And the issue was violence committed in the name of religion. I think it's very important to say that those committing violence are human beings. It's not the religions themselves. It's not the religions doing it. But it's human beings using religion, abusing religion to justify atrocities. And I mean, it's important that people speak out very clearly, very quickly, the religious communities themselves, condemning violence, but also presenting the good messages. Interreligious cooperation can, at the same time, can help a lot.
UN Special Rapporteur on Freedom of Religion and Belief, Professor Heine Belfield, in that interview with Ibrahim Kwate.
Deputy Attorney General Dominic Ayeni says the state is hopeful of winning its appeal against Mr. Woyome. According to the Deputy Attorney General and Minister of Justice, the trial judge erred in law in acquitting and discharging the businessman. According to him, the judge disregarded credible evidence led by the prosecution witness on why the state did not bring former Minister of Justice and Attorney General Betty Moldidrisu and her deputy Ibu Batinodru as witnesses. He indicated that the state's decision was informed by their public comments on the issue. He also disclosed that his outfit had considered charging Mrs. Moldidrisu, Mr. Batinodru and the rest, but no firm decision has been taken yet. On the retrieval of the 51 million cedis paid to Mr. Woyome, the deputy minister said the process is underway and expressed a hope that that would be accomplished in a few weeks.
Commissioner of Shura Justice Emil Schultz says the state is likely to lose its appeal against businessman Alfred Agbeshi Woyome. According to him, the trial judge John Ajetnasam made findings of fact to support his judgment. Speaking to Radio Ghana, Justice Schultz said once the state cannot bring any new witnesses to leave any new evidence, its chances of succeeding are almost impossible. He spoke to Bubu Klinogo.
The state has little or no chance of winning, you know, the appeal. the state has an uphill task because, you know, when a trial court hears a case and makes findings of fact, it's very difficult for the Court of Appeal to reverse those findings of fact unless they are manifestly unreasonable. Now, in this case, the trial court found that the prosecution had failed to prove their case. They failed to call material witnesses. And on this point, it is important to point out that on appeal, the state will not have the opportunity to call those material witnesses, people like the former Attorney General, Mrs. Betty Baldrige-Josu, and Mr. Barton Odro, the deputy, both of whom were at post at the time, and other members of the Attorney General's office who were not called. On appeal, the state does not have the opportunity to remedy that defect by calling those witnesses. And also, it's important to point out that the trial court pointed out that former Attorney General, these two people like they should, had written opinion saying that Wayome was entitled to the money. And also, I think there were one or two prosecution witnesses whose evidence corroborated that of Wayome. So when you put all this together, it's going to be extremely difficult for the state to be able to reverse this verdict on appeal.
This, your position is very interesting, because when you listen to the Attorney General and for that matter the deputy, they stated that they were able to prove their case beyond reasonable doubt in that the witnesses they produced, for instance, the prosecution witness too, that's former Minister for Youth and Sports, Osafu Manfo, did indicate that Wayome had no contract with the state and therefore he did not deserve any money. And according to that, the judge was very selective in choosing the kind of evidence that he would use in his judgment, and that he ignored the most important evidence. That is, how can he arrive at that judgment?
The issue is not whether Wayome was entitled to the money. The Supreme Court has already ruled that Wayome should pay back the money. So that one, that is not in dispute. But when you are dealing with criminal offenses like willfully causing financial loss to the state and a false pretext, different considerations arise. And so saying that Wayne was not entitled to the body is not the end of the matter.
Again, if you listen to the Attorney General, they stated that the judge was sort of biased and that his open criticism of the prosecution was unfair. And then also the fact that they did not call Mrs. Betty Modidrosu and Barton Odro had no material effect on their case, in that those two people have stated categorically that Wayome was entitled to the money, and if they call them as witnesses, they were not coming to say anything in favor of the prosecution.
Well, the state is entitled to appeal, and if the state feels that it has laid sufficient evidence to convict the accused, let them go ahead and appeal.
A former Commissioner of Child Justice, Emil Short, talking to the Weekly Nugo. This news comes to you from Radio Ghana, Accra, and the major stories. Minister of Gospel warns country could lose services of competent citizens if vilification of leaders is not stopped. AG's department hopeful of state winning appeal against acquittal of businessman Alfred Agbeshi Wayome. Tomb of Saddam Hussein destroyed in fighting near his hometown, Tikrit. And Cyclone Pam wreaks havoc on Pacific island of Vanuatu, with nearly 90% of buildings destroyed in the capital villa.
Welcome back. Deputy Minister of Finance Atu Forson says government's projections in the budget statement presented in November last year were thrown off because of the fall in the price of crude oil on the international market. Speaking on GBC's current affairs program Talking Point, Mr. Forson said, with Ghana being a net importer of crude oil, it is necessary for government to revise its estimates in the budget, hence the need to go back to Parliament with new estimates.
We have said that today, around January, the world market price was about 47. Okay, everybody thought it was going to go down to about 30. Had a number of predictions coming from the World Economic Outlook through the IMF and the International Energy and others. They all come out with their predictions. We have started with the prediction coming from the World Economic Outlook, and they are saying that it's going to be about 152.8. Now, we have to be very upright and look at what it means in terms of what we budgeted. So you budget for 4.2, and then obviously it's the way the trend that is going, because let me also say that the trend is going to continue based on the projections that we are seeing. And because obviously it's demand and supply. One, from the demand point of view, price, you will see a lot of demand, and demand not going very high, because you can see the countries like the BRICS not doing very well as expected, because those are countries that drive growth, world economic growth. And then we are seeing system, though doing well, but not doing very well.
The MP for Obuasi West and a member of the Parliamentary Select Committee on Finance, Kweku Kwarteng, said government must come clear on the revised budget. He said when prices of crude oil began to fall, government sought to reduce the price of the product at the pumps with the excuse of paying the bulk distribution companies. However, government has not come out as to how much has been accrued from the savings.
Ghana has a share in the export, so if prices go down, you are definitely going to lose something at that end. The companies that we are in partnership with in this oil business, they sell their oil, they pay corporate tax. So there too, it will go down. That is on the export side. On the import side, we import petroleum products. Now, many of us have been saying that government should reduce fuel prices to correspond to the drop in the price of petroleum products internationally. Right. Government says, no, I need to make savings to support those things in the economy that also need money. That's what government has been telling us. You are bringing a statement to tell us the overall impact of the change in the price of oil, and government has done fantastic analysis on the export side. The entire statement is silent on the import side, and so we don't know how much savings have been made. And so if we are a net importer of crude oil or petroleum products and price of petroleum products go down, somebody ought to come and say, yes, we lost this much here, but we gained this much here. If you net it off, there's a little less. Maybe we are using it to pay the BDC. If government made that argument, we probably would agree with government. But then we will begin to ask, what then is the basis for, in this statement, cutting allocation to goods and services?
A financial analyst, Sydney Crisley-Hayford, said government should have anticipated the fall in crude oil prices before making the projections in the budget.
If you feel that your budget is going to be derailed because there are issues sitting right there glaring at you in your face, don't go ahead with it simply because you have a law and the law says that you have to calculate the figure by 1st of September. You have complied. In coming to present the budget, you complied with the law and you fixed the price at 99.38. But by the time you read the budget in November, those numbers have changed. Now, go back to the basis on which we derived the 99.8. In doing so, the output data, the GNPC forecast, which was used to project the number of barrels of petroleum to be projected and the pricing, were very clear. We had historical data for 2013, that's 12 months of historical data actual. We used 6 months of current year data to 2014, January to June. Then we forecast July to December.
And those were views of panelists on GBC's current affairs program Talking Point. We discussed the 2015 revised budget statement.
Ghana's ambassador to the UN, Ken Kanda, has retired after 39 years of dedicated career in Ghana's foreign service. At an emotional farewell get-together organized by staff of the Ghana Mission and the Ghanaian community in New York, Mr. Kanda extended an invitation to Ghanaian professionals across the globe to return home and help build the country. He noted that Ghanaian professionals are needed back home to support the transformational agenda of government. We bring you more. Mr. Kanda commended the staff for their commitment and dedication to duty and challenged them to continue to offer dedicated service to project Ghana's image at the United Nations. Nanoye Lisa, Minister of Gender, Children and Social Protection, thanked Mr. Kanda for dedicated service to Mother Ghana. She described Mr. Kanda as a mentor and role model who has provided inspiration to the younger Ghanaian diplomats who are serving all over the world. Nanoye Lisa called on the staff to always protect the image of Ghana and promote the country at the international level to attract foreign investment in order to increase the country's productivity and promote development. Mr. Kanda entered the Ghanaian Foreign Service in 1976 and served in places including Copenhagen and Bonn. He served as protocol officer to then Vice President John Evans Atta Mills between 1997 and 1998. He also held positions within the Ghana Foreign Service, both within and outside the country, till 2009 when he became Director of State Protocol. Mr. Kanda continued in this post till his appointment to the United Nations. He was appointed in 2011 by late President Mills. That was a news desk report.
The Ghana Police Service is collaborating with the Togolese counterparts to apprehend the seven criminals who escaped from the Denu police cells last week. The Volta Regional Minister Helen Ntosu told Radio Ghana that pictures of the criminals have been given to the police in Togo to assist them in their investigations. Madame Ntosu also appeals to the public to assist the police to arrest the criminals. She spoke to Yaya Kwamua.
The police are seriously looking for them. So what has happened is that they have given out their pictures to the public because it was the citizens of Ablau who arrested these guys, handed them over to police. Then they were sent to court and then remanded. The day before court, the police came for them from Ho to the south in Ablau. That was what the regional police commander told me. You know, so the people are not happy because they were receiving even threats from these guys that when they are out, they were there with them. So the people are in fear now. So everybody is helping because you can imagine two AK rebels and about 50 rounds of ammunition in the hands of criminals. So it's a very threatening situation. So everybody is on the alert to report to police if they spot them. And then you know that Plau is also very close to Togo. From the police command, they have also given the pictures to their counterparts in Togo to also look out for them.
What action has been taken against the policemen who were on duty on that day?
I think the police administration will take care of that, because if you're on duty and then seven criminals escape, they have their own line of action to take. From the police directory, they are investigating. So until they are done with the investigations, I cannot actually tell you what actions they're going to take against them. So when they are done with that, then we can get back to you.
What appeal do you have for the public?
I'm appealing to them to help the police to be able to get these guys again, you know, to put them before court.
Volta Regional Minister Helen Ntosu.
On the foreign front, tomb of ousted Iraqi leader Saddam Hussein has been almost completely leveled in fighting near Tikrit. Footage shows all that remains of the once lavish mausoleum in the village of Al-Awja are pillars that held up the roof. Iraqi forces and Iranian Bakshia militias are battling to drive Islamic State militants from Tikrit. Last year, the local Sunni population said they removed Saddam's body and took it to an unknown location. The footage shows a mausoleum south of the city reduced to concrete rubble.
Aid has begun arriving in the storm-hit nation Vanuatu, one of the world's poorest, where trees and power lines have been felled and many buildings destroyed. Aid agencies say it could be one of the worst disasters ever to hit the region. The situation on some islands closer to the eye of the storm is not yet known, as communication networks are down. Reports say just about every house has received some damage. Aerial images of the capital show houses completely flattened, and aid workers say there's an urgent need for fresh water supplies.
So in the news, the main points again. The immediate past General Assembly moderator of the Evangelical Presbyterian Church Ghana, the Very Reverend Francis Aminu, has expressed worry at the vilification of some leaders who risked their lives in the line of their duty to ensure that Ghana attains its desired development goals. He was speaking at the farewell service in honor of Reverend Joyce Kofi Kodade, who has ended his duty tour as the Synod moderator of the West Volta Presbytery. Deputy General's Department is hopeful of the state winning an appeal against the acquittal of businessman Alfred Agbeshiwoyomi. However, a former Commissioner of Strat Justice, Emil Short, says the state is likely to lose its appeal. And the tomb of Saddam Hussein has been destroyed in fighting near his hometown, Tikrit. And that ends the news presented by Barbara Yakubu.
And Lily Defo in Accra.